So it's a real pleasure to share the evening and let you meet an old friend, a long friendship, let's put it like that. Nancy Bartike is a nurse midwife who's been practicing for many years, and she's somebody I've always enjoyed hanging out with, which is even better than other stuff on a resume, which is a good resume. As I said, she is one of the leading voices in consciousness and around birthing, and has been guiding pregnant women and families for many, many years, just putting the Dharma into the most practical way for the most mysterious event in our lives, the coming into this world. And she's written a lovely book called Mindful Birthing, Training the Mind, Body, and Heart for Childbirth and Beyond, forward by Jon Kabat-Zinn, Mindful Birthing. So please welcome Nancy Bartike.
Well, thank you, James, and thank you for the very kind introduction. It's really special for me to be here. As I was reflecting this morning and making my few notes about being invited here, I want you to know that I took my very first meditation class with James probably over 30 years ago now. So in many ways, the causes and conditions of the book happening, he's an essential element. It was in the basement of Harwood House before there was Spirit Rock, and we were kids. We were really kids. So it was in the very early 80s. And I remember also sitting with Jack when he was in a teaching out of the church in Fairfax. I remember actually going to the groundbreaking of Spirit Rock. So I, as James said, have been a Dharma practitioner for a really long time. I actually have been a midwife even longer. I like to say that I started paying attention to the birth process when I was sitting in a childbirth education class here in the Berkeley Hills, when I was pregnant with my first son, and he will be 45 years old on Christmas Eve. I had a baby on Christmas Eve. I was in good company, right? In those days, there weren't things like childbirth education classes. Teddy, my son, was born at Alta Bates Hospital. So I was just saying to someone, I was raised in Los Angeles, but I grew up in Berkeley. So the calling, really, to be a midwife really began that 45 years ago with the birth of my son, and as I said, predated my encounter with the Dharma through James and those who I'm sure you all are familiar with. But being a midwife, and you know, the definition of midwife is, in German, is with woman, and that's presence. And that's basically the job, is to be present for this profound process. And it's an extraordinary work to be able to be present and serve, really, in that way, serving families as they go through this life transition. Can I just ask, how many of you, our parents, have gone through or witnessed a birth process? I mean, we've all gone through one, our own, right? And I tell everyone, please call your mother and say thank you on your birthday. Because that's how you got here. Whatever else she did, she did that for you. And you're here because of that. You know, when I first began my practice of midwifery, there wasn't even midwifery. In California, it wasn't even legal yet. But there, we were doing things that were breaking rules, and women were starting to have their babies at home because what was going on in the hospital was not a happy situation. And there weren't folks to help them. And so with the training of wonderful and compassionate doctors, they trained those of us who started attending women at home, and I was one of those. And so I had the good fortune to really witness this process through really beginner's mind, without being clouded by all sorts of education of a certain type. Saw and witnessed just how profound and the body and the mind were in this time. And there would be things that would happen during the birth process that we would sit around as midwives and talk about them, but we couldn't explain them. And it would be something to do with, for example, if I was at a birth and a woman wasn't progressing or something, I'd send some people out of the room. And then all of a sudden, the process would change. Or somebody would come to me and they were having their second baby and they were very frightened to have their second baby because they weren't sure that they could love this next baby as much as they loved this first baby, and they were a second child, and remembered when how it was when they were born, and didn't want to put their firstborn through that, and you know, those kinds of things, and cry, and then go into labor. And it was like, well, what is going on in this mind and body of ours? And it was a real puzzle. Nevertheless, I knew it was true. And then I went to nursing school and midwifery school and started practicing in a hospital setting because I wanted to take what I had learned from the women and families at home into the hospital setting. And I was under some illusion that somehow if I could be there and support this normal process and, you know, be of service and help, everything was going to turn out okay because I was going to be in charge and I was going to make sure it was done right. Wrong. It didn't work because guess what? Nobody's in charge of this process. And this is a force of nature. And it took many years, and that's when I encountered the Dharma, right when I was starting my practice in a hospital setting. And I was really unhappy and puzzled and very stressed out because I couldn't make this thing go the way I wanted it to. And that's, of course, life, right? So it took me quite a while to figure out, oh, I'm not in charge of life either. And I remember actually a story, and maybe you've told it here, but I remember a story that has come back to me often And you never know when you're teaching what who's going to pick up what and what it's going to what's going to stick, right? I get people coming up to me and telling me they remember things I said when they were having their baby 30 years ago. And I was like, oh, really? but I remember you telling a story. You were on a retreat. You can fill in the details. But I remember you talking about being on a walk in the retreat and really getting it that everything changes. Do you remember that? I don't know who, but I have a fantasy that it was at IMS. Is that true? Uh-huh. Okay. See, I was listening. I was paying careful attention. And now the first chapter of the book is everything's changing. And, of course, having that deep within us as we go through the process of whatever process of life is extremely, extremely helpful. So what happened was I was learning the Dharma from James and from, you know, everybody that I could find the time to go and sit with, and Joseph and Sharon and Yvonne, Rand, and I was eclectic. I was going all over the place. And I did retreats with Thich Nhat Hanh before people knew who he was and stuff like that. And I continued doing my midwifery practice, and I would feel kind of at a loss or frustrated, because I would see in the people who would come to me not understanding the Dharma and a way of working with it. So somebody would be in my office, maybe 10 weeks pregnant, and they're bleeding, you know, and just beside themselves, as one can understand. But I'm picking up a heartbeat, and they can hear a heartbeat, but I can't guarantee she's not going to go on to have a miscarriage. She doesn't know that. But if she can know in that present moment, in that moment, the baby's alive and everything is, in fact, okay. And if she knew how she could be in the moment, present moment, moment by moment, there would be a huge decrease in the potential suffering. So I would have that experience, you know, and that's just one of them, of course. And feel somewhat at a loss and frustrated because I couldn't, you know, what could I do right in the exam room? I mean, telling them to breathe and be in the moment, as, you know, it's like, yeah, sure. So then after I'd been practicing for about 12 years, I guess, or even longer, I encountered Jon Kabat-Zinn. And perhaps some of you have read some of his work or even taken a mindfulness-based stress reduction course, or wherever you go, there you are, or whatever. And I, you know, clearly remember the evening when he was giving a talk out in Marin County, and I walked in, and it's like, there he was in a hospital setting teaching the Dharma. And I thought, who in the world is this guy? And I went to a training with him. And in that training, it all just came together for me of how I might, a form, really, of how I might teach the kinds of things that we learn in the Dharma halls in a way, in a language, that made it accessible to people who might not ever get over to Spirit Rock. And so I trained with John and taught the mindfulness-based stress reduction course for quite a number of years, and then started morphing it into this program, which is based on that work. And I teach it now at the Osher Center for Integrative Medicine over at UCSF. But for many years, it was too far out of the box to take into the hospital setting. And so I was teaching it in the living room of my home, just a few blocks from Alta Bates. So the evolution of this is about 14 years of teaching. I've taught I've taught the last count is something like 1,300 expectant families. I mean, 1,300 expectant parents in this, using this form. And what I've seen has, you know, if I thought birth was a miracle, the transformation that people can get and the benefit from the Dharma and the skills for this profound life transition that they're going through just is, you know, is breathtaking, continuously. And so, you know, here's a description of it. And sometimes people ask me, how long did it take you to write this book? And I feel like it's my whole life. It really is the distillation of what I've come to see. And it's just extraordinarily helpful because we all are leading such stressful lives, and to be able to teach practices that help people shift around the stress, and certainly the transition from non-parent to parent, or from parent of one to parent of two or three, is stressful because everything from the most fundamental, the environment, the home, the relationship with family, relationship with community, relationship with the body, relationship with identity, everything is completely changing in this profound transition. So, chapter one, everything's changing. And from that, then we go into the insights of the Dharma, which are impermanence. And really, really getting it that nothing stays the same. And that is an extremely helpful perspective to take into this challenging mind-body experience. Because guess what? Those of you who've given birth know it. The process has some pretty intense physical sensations that we usually call pain. And people can get pretty scared about the process. So the training of the mind to continually come back to the present moment and to notice how we generate fear by projection into the future, because fear is always about the future, even if it's only about the next moment. And so beginning to practice and to notice the construction of fear in fantasy, right? And that's the thought, noticing it, letting it go, and using the breath as the anchor to come back to the present moment, or thinking about the past, which is also just thoughts, but that's memory, and it's really gone. So noticing that, coming back to the present, and fully learning the skill of working at least, to really fully be present, because that's all that one needs to do to get through the birth process, and actually to get through life. It's no different. It's just that the birth process is so, well, on a certain level, dramatic, on a certain level, moving so fast, and so that you have this, it's the process makes those elements of life, in some sense, writ large. You can't escape a body that's changing, but come on, our bodies are changing all the time. I mean, you used to be an infant at one point, right? You didn't have any teeth. You couldn't walk. You couldn't talk. And we're all moving through time. And the birth process, again, because it's so dramatic, intense, important, is a beautiful opportunity to show this. So let me show you this, because let me tell you a little bit. Okay, so this is the book. And she's got a nickname. And her nickname is Daisy, obviously. You can see there's a Daisy on the cover. Now, anybody who's done any creative work you know, is the metaphor of labor and birth is often used, right, when you're in a process. So I've been in labor with Daisy for quite a long time. I never know when. It was, you know, maybe when I signed the book. From the time I signed the book contract to getting her published was 3 years. But there was a lot of stuff that went before and book proposal. I never wrote a book. What do I know? So anyway, it's a similar kind of thing. Sometimes, especially women who've had or having their first baby, they're pregnant, they feel the movement inside, but do they really believe it? Not exactly. And as a midwife, when I'm there and, you know, helping the woman have the baby and the baby's coming out and you know, I'm guiding her sometimes with her hands and helping her pull the baby out, and she takes the baby out and she goes, "It's a baby." Yes, it's a baby. But it's not until you get the sight and the smell and the touch that you really believe that it's a baby. And then, of course, it's just a total miracle. It's like, where did this person come from? And those of you who are parents, you know, and I'm a grandma now, and I look at these. Don't you do that with Adam? I mean, where in the world? You know, you shave and you have girlfriends and you do whatever you do. I mean, it's really a miracle. And of course, I feel incredibly blessed as a midwife to have witnessed and supported and been part of that process. So I feel a little bit like that happened with Daisy. It's like, you know, you sit and you do moment by moment and word by word, and then the drafts and the this and the that and the, and it's all on this 8.5 by 11, and so, and then someday it shows up and it's a book and you have no idea where it came from. And that's the feeling I have about her. She's a daughter. I have two sons, two stepsons, two grandsons, and a very dear husband. And, you know, I needed to have a daughter. So this is Daisy. Now, let me tell you, the only thing that I really, really wanted was some input on the cover. They don't give that to authors. It's even funny to call myself an author, but to people who write books, they usually don't let you have any say because they want to sell this thing. And of course, I want it to sell too because I think it'll help people. But I did get it into the book contract. The only thing that I did not want was a pregnant woman sitting on the cover like this. No. Right? I mean, remember first trimester, those of you who've been or been partners with somebody who's, you know, all the time, many moments you spend with your head over the toilet, and then, you know, the varicose veins and the backache and the fear about this. And no, this won't do. Besides the fact that the Dharma principles are universal. And if I put it into a human figure, there's all sorts of problems, like what color the skin is, and what does the hair look like, and what does the body shape look like. And I just didn't want to go there. And so that was my only sort of instruction. And what they sent me back was this cover. And I was completely blown away when I saw it. Because in the book is a concept that I think would probably resonate with you. And it's a concept of horticultural time. And what you see here is, you know, the bud and then the flower opening and the daisy of fully emerging. Now, of course, this is about birth, but those of us who, you know, fully do the Dharma, we know what happens after daisy, and what happens in horticultural time, right? So we've got an arc here of our lifetime, birth to death. And, of course, one of the things that happens in as a midwife is you don't hang out around birth for very long without encountering death or the fear of it. And that's just part of the territory. And so to have to have this, and I'm very pleased that, in fact, I got to include a chapter on grief and loss and miscarriages, stillbirths, something like that, which I was worried that they weren't going to let me do that in a book about birth, you know, that was going to continue the cultural denial of the reality of the fact that we're born and we're going to die. And each breath isn't, you know, I've witnessed so many first breaths, and I remember a kind of insight that, you know, how it happens, and I would imagine many of you have had those, where you get that insight, and it's like just in you, it's embodied, it's like, you know, you can say everything's changing, but when you really get it, where it becomes like a guiding principle of your life, and I can remember, you know, sitting in practice and practicing and paying attention to the breath, and I'll tell you, nobody knows why we take our first breath, by the way. I mean, the physiology of it. Nobody can explain it, and believe me, I've asked, but we really are born on an in-breath, and we die on an out-breath. And when there is a time, there will be a time for every single one of us where we will breathe in, we will breathe out, and we will not breathe in again. That's just true, and that's Dharma. And to be able to teach the skills to the next two generations, because when I have people in my classroom, I'm, you know, they're my kids' age, right? Because I mean, my younger ones are in their 30s and reproductive age. And then they're my grandkids that are a generation that are growing in the bodies of these people in the room. And then, of course, for those who are carrying girl babies, the eggs of the great-grandchildren are being formed then, because the girl babies are born with the eggs that will make her children. So right there, I think we sometimes tend to think of the horizontal of the Dharma and the suffering of our own lives, but this is like through time of teaching the skills that then are going to go through generations, potentially. And what I see is the opportunity for people to bring awareness to this process and to their lives, and to become aware of patterns of the mind, patterns of the heart, patterns that were formed in their families of origin, potentially, and to become more aware and to be able to make moment-to-moment choices so that patterns of dysfunction don't have to continue, because we learn to parent from the way we were parented. Now, we can pass those on unconsciously. Sometimes we pass them on reactively. We say, I don't want to do that, and then we go way to the other extreme and we're in reaction. But this is really a way for people to bring wisdom to their moment-to-moment parenting, which anybody who's been a parent or been a child and grew up with parents knows it's not an uncomplicated business sometimes. So it is really thrilling to be able to teach the Dharma, the universal principles, the capacity to be aware, which we all are born with, and how to cultivate that at a particular time in the life cycle, and support the healthy process. Because stress ain't great for a pregnant woman, and it's not great for the baby either. And then to be able to teach skills that what happens when we learn the skills for working with our physical body, then we can begin to uncouple the reactivity, the sensations in the body from the emotional reactions to the physical discomfort or pain, and also the cognitive thoughts. And of course, that's what we do in practice. And when we uncouple those and pay attention to the physical sensations, you are making the distinction between pain and suffering. So that when these families are going into this birth process and knowing how to be in the present moment, to stay with the breath, they know how the mind can get agitated. How much longer is this going to go on? Oh my God, the last contraction was so bad. How am I going to handle another? Which are all just past and future. Watching the mind and staying in the present moment, breathing one breath at a time through this process of the intensity of the physical sensations. And then what is discovered is an incredible time of peace between the sensations. And to even know that there is time of peace and rest, some women think, oh my God, I'm going to be in pain for 20 hours. It doesn't work like that. But it's the mind that is going into the past and future that then turns the agitation on, and then you get yourself working against the process. So it's learning how to stay out of your own way. And of course, this is the same thing that we do with life. So I tell people we're learning how to deal with the contractions of labor, but we're really learning how to deal with the contractions of life, because the birth comes and goes, and it is how it is. But guess what? That baby comes out. And if you're lucky, that baby is with you for the rest of your life, right? And then you got to raise it. And that's what I'm doing with Dave. It's like, oh, I got a book, but then now it's going out there as kids do, and she's in the world, and all sorts of things are happening because of her. And it's like, oh, beginner's mind. Now what do I do? This is happening, and that's happening. And, you know, because one of the remarkable things that has been happening is how in the form that Jon Kabat-Zinn has developed, it really is all over the world. And now I've connected some dots here, and people are having babies all over the world, so the two together, it just makes sense. So, yeah. I mean, the translation rights for this thing, I'm sorry, Daisy, I didn't mean to call you a thing. But the translation rights are already sold in Turkish. I mean, and I'm training some midwives in Amsterdam, and one of them works in a hospital where they're working with Turkish immigrants. And she was thrilled. The reason I'm sharing this with you is to expand what is happening with the Dharma in so many places through so many forms, well beyond the meditation halls, because people get it of the degree of suffering there is in this world. And we gotta pay more attention to horticultural time, or, you know, we're in big trouble, right? I mean, that's where the way that the world is working so much is industrial time. And industrial time, clock time, cell phone time, all this emails, and there's a real I don't want to say clash, but a disharmony between our bodies and what is healthy for us and the time that we are now forcing ourselves to live in. And certainly that's true with the birth process. And, you know, the institutions in general work on industrial time and are not as supportive as one could be of horticultural time, the time of the body. And of course, it's a middle path because we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater. In other words, the technology can be life-saving and fabulous, and thank goodness it's around. But it is being overused. And I don't know if you know, but the cesarean section rate in our country now is 33%. That means one in three women are having their babies surgically. I was in Salzburg this summer, and I sat a retreat with John, and I met some women from Iran. The cesarean section rate is 80%. In Brazil, it's 90. So incredible harm is being done with the technology, and then we can also talk on a global scale of what's happening and women who are not having access to care and are still dying in great numbers in childbirth. So there's a whole territory here that's kind of hidden in some way because we hide birth and we hide death from ourselves and from each other. So hopefully these will help wake people up to what it is and the preciousness of life. And in fact, that is what happens in the classroom when people get in touch with their heart and the preciousness of what they're bringing into the world and the preciousness of life. So there is a tremendous shift in consciousness and the quality of parenting that I'm seeing in the folks that I have the privilege to teach is just really impressive. So so what's happening now is I'm training other people to teach, and that's a whole new phase. And you know, I know how to teach in the classroom, but now I got to figure out how to train people. And so here I am again, beginner's mind. It's like, okay, now I got to deal with the consequences of having given birth to Daisy, and here we go. And like life, it's not over till it's over, and it keeps on going, and we keep figuring it out. I love the line that Pema Chodron says, you know, life is just one big adult education course. And, you know, if we take that kind of approach to the birth process, it is an opportunity to really look deeply at something very profound and remarkable and a miracle, because we're all walking miracles. I mean, this body, you know, we're just walking miracles. The liver has something like 500 functions, and, you know, if you really look at the body, it's just astounding that we're all walking around as healthy, actually, as we are. And that all that, it just happened inside of your mom. I mean, so it's like beyond almost what the mind can comprehend, and it's same with death. Where do they go? How did that happen? And there's a liberation in that wholeness of seeing all of us as precious beings. And, you know, it's like they say, and it's true, 100 years, all new people. And those new people are the ones that are being birthed in the classroom. Or the eggs. Actually, it's not. Those kids might not live to be 100. So, anyway. So, there you have it. I didn't know what I was going to tell you, but I'd really love to just take some time for questions or comments or just to have a little dialogue together.
Thank you. First, I just wanted to make a comment and we can open it up. It is, even for the men who will never give birth, we all go through some creative process, or if you've gone through a creative process, it is like a birth, and it's kind of works through you.
Yes.
Spirit Rock, when we were first getting Spirit Rock together, and some of us had a vision of it, and a really clear sense of what we wanted to create, but the real shift for me came when we talked about this as a small group of the people who envisioned it as a collective, changing from feeling like, oh, it's up to us to create this fantastic Dharma Center, to we are just midwives to the process. That's exactly the term that I used and we used, and it's just the Dharma was wanting to do something, and if we could just create the conditions and support it, whatever, that there's such a freedom and the letting go of the selfing, both with feeling the pressure or feeling the credit, or isn't this wonderful what we did? It's so different when you just see there's this mystery, this miracle that's happening through us.
That's right.
And if you have any kind of experience with whatever you create, it's really a practice of anatta, of that the selfless nature of reality and the joy. Then you can delight in the mystery of being used well, rather than it's up to you to make it happen or not. I had exactly the same experience when was coming out with Awakening Joy. It was, and my co-author Shoshana said, you know, this is, you're going to have a relationship with this entity. And, you know, and it was, I didn't call him or her, but it was the book that was birthing through me and through us. So there's a real freedom in that, and a letting go, and then you're just kind of showing up for the process.
Yeah,
it's great how you don't have to figure it out. It's like, oh, this is the next thing that's happening.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, look at this is the next thing. James invited me to come here. Yeah. This is incredible. After 30 plus years, here I'm sitting here. It's just extraordinary.
How
fun.
Yeah. Yeah,
and so it's like you're just along for the ride.
Yeah,
you know, it's yeah.
It's very cool.
And of course, you fall down and you hit your head a couple of times, and
it's part of the process.
Part of the process. Yeah.
There's no mistakes, as Julia Butterfly Hill says. You know, as long as you're learning, there's no mistakes.
Right.
It's all part of the process. So, any thing that comes up that you want to ask or bring up, or if it touches for you your own creative process or Dharma understanding in some way, Jim.
I'd like to hear more of your thoughts on the benefits of natural birth versus C-section. I mean, so I'm inclined to sort of subjectively agree with you without having any supporting arguments for that.
Well, actually, thank you for that wonderful question, because Daisy is not about natural childbirth. And I make that very clear. From my point of view, every birth is natural. It's natural for a baby to grow inside its mother's body. It's natural for a baby to come out. And it's natural for people to want to help. The problem is there's a little too much help. And the help may not be given skillfully. So, and that, in fact, the whole issue of natural childbirth, quite frankly, I really don't know what natural childbirth is anymore. The phrasing that I like to use is minimal to no medical intervention. There's no guarantees. And so I see a tremendous amount of suffering from families, women who get a very strong attachment to an idea of what's right and the way they want to give birth, and then it doesn't go the way they expected, which is, you know, as I began sharing with you, that was my lesson of the birth process as a midwife. I'm not in charge, and they're not in charge. It's a body process that is moving through one, and there is no me, because this body is just this body. And the tremendous suffering that comes from having a very strong attachment to having things go a certain way. And, Patty Robertson, who's a professor of medicine over at obstetrics over at UCSF, she did a blurb for the book, and she says, "I often recognize Nancy's students by their enthusiastic embrace of their labor, by their focus, and by their amazing ability to cope with unexpected challenges. I highly recommend this book to all pregnant women." Now, she can see it. She doesn't know whether they've taken the class or not. I mean, she may ask them, but she can. And I hear that a lot from practitioners. They actually can see these people dealing with the process differently and coping with the unexpected, because that's birth, that's life. There's always unexpected. So if somebody's got a strong attachment, it's we work at the letting go and just being in the present moment. So I try not to help. I try to encourage people not to have a lot of attachment preferences. You know, I don't even have them do a birth plan. You can plan this thing. Certainly preferences are important, being engaged in the process. But, you know, having a cesarean or not, what I've found as a midwife, that's really the essential element of feeling satisfied with the birth experience. And I wonder if it might be true about dying. I never thought of that, but we could think about that. Is that the woman and her partner or families do not feel that they were done to, that they were in partnership in the process, and that they were participants, and that they were respected and treated kindly. And those are the elements of good care and of a positive experience, regardless of whether you have an epidural or a cesarean or whatever. That's my experience and how I would midwife people through the experience. So that was the wrong answer, but I hope that was helpful. Yeah.
Anybody else?
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
One of the powers of Jon Kabat-Zinn's MBSR is that it's fairly reproducible, and so he's been able to do a fair amount of research around it and showing outcomes and such. And right. I was wondering if your classes, you've done that or are planning to do that, because it would be interesting to sort of see what kinds of things you find.
Right, right. Well, thank you very much for that question. And the answer is yes. you know, it was so far out of the box to begin it that I taught in my living room for about 7+ years, and then I was invited to come over to the Osher Center. And at that point, a wonderful researcher, Larissa Duncan, who had worked with Mark Greenberg, bringing mindfulness into a program for families with teens, and they were teaching mindfulness to both the parents and the teenagers. And she would see the impact of the mindfulness skills, and that the parents would say, "Why didn't anybody teach us this sooner?" And they would be heartbroken, and they'd, you know, our whole parenting would be different. The kids' lives would have been different. And so she kept looking upstream, and John told her about me, and she came. So we've been working for about 5 years. We have done a small pilot and found decreased pregnancy anxiety, decreased depression, pregnancy depression, which, of course, these things have impacts on the baby as well as the partnership relationship. Increased mindfulness, increased positive emotions, increased coping abilities. So we've done that. We've got several other studies, one on mindfulness and childbirth pain, which has never been done. John's work shows that pain, you know, it definitely helps with pain, chronic pain. So we're looking at childbirth pain. We're looking at quality of attachment, for those of you who are psychologists, and breastfeeding. I'm also working with Mark Williams, who has developed MBCT, the mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. We have a training program and a research program at Oxford University at his center there. I'm training the Amsterdam midwives for a large randomized controlled trial in Amsterdam, quite a large study. So we're moving along because, as you said, that's one of the reasons that this, one of the ways that this has moved into the mainstream. So we're working at it. And we're also got a study going, teaching mindfulness skills to low-income women over at San Francisco General, including teaching it in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we're working hard.
Beautiful.
And I need to train more people because I can't do it all.
Mm-hmm. So it's time for us to go. I want to mention that there are some copies of the book in the back. Maybe Nancy will be here if you have some questions. And thank you so much for coming here, and thank you so much for the 1,300 plus parents that you've gone through, you've shared, that will just keep on rippling, and for giving birth to Daisy and all the work that you've done these last 30, 40 years, both spiritually and in the midwifing practice. You've given planted many, many seeds through your birthing. So let's close with a. Is it? Do you need a ride or something like that? Where do you need a ride to? Yeah. Anyone going to Marin? No. Or to where? Where else could you get? Okay. There you go. Yeah. So let's just take a few a moment and get in touch with your own heart, which was born on your birthday, your mysterious life starting, taking its first breath, and here you are, a living expression of the mystery, something to respect and to honor and to love. May all the goodness and love and wisdom that's been gifted to you be seen and expressed in a beautiful way. May you know deep peace in the midst of all the sorrows and joys. And then may our coming here together be of benefit to not only ourselves, everyone in our lives, and rippling out to be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all see the mystery, the divine spark that has ignited the life within them, and share their love well, and know the highest happiness and freedom. Thank you very much. Have a great week. Have a great couple of weeks. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks, Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.